Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprint on BBSRadio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I will be with you for the next hour on this March the 3rd on the West Coast, now March the 4th on the East Coast and in the Central time zones. We'd like to welcome everyone listening in on Wind Talkers Radio Network around the world, especially those in the U.S. military, and on blogtalkradio.com. Lots going on these days. It seems like the flu pandemic is starting to wind up again. I noticed these subtle commercials where you've got talk show hosts, you've got disc jockeys, you've got people doing commercials for soap and children's toys telling you to wash your hands and make sure you get your swine flu vaccination. Seems to me that that's practicing medicine without a license. But these days, they do whatever they want. So I suppose we will do that tonight with our guest. She has been on the show a couple of times now, and by popular demand, and by my popular demand, we have brought her back. She's a vaccine researcher of over 25 years, and I can tell you that there are a lot of people in the business that haven't been doing the kind of research this young lady has been doing. And she has very personal reasons for having gone down this path, those that touched her at home. And so if you wonder about her motivations, it's to certainly reveal the corruption that goes on in the pharmaceutical industry. And with that, I want to welcome back to Evident Footprints. This is now her third appearance, believe it or not. My good friend, Allison Jones. Allison, welcome to the show.
Oh, so great to be here, Don. Thank you for having me.
Well, it's my pleasure to have you. There's so much to cover, and, you know, I posted your booklet up on my website. So anyone that's interested in just reading a short little review I did, there's no timpani roll or big fanfare, nothing like that. Basically, I read through your booklet, and I find it fascinating, the amount of and the variety of research that you have done, and basically condensing it all into a 44-page document that anyone can read, and with a little bit of IQ, they can understand as well. You call it Tracking Vaccinations, the Autism Trail. That's on my book page. So if anyone goes to directlightproductions.com and clicks on books, and then go to the top of the page there, you'll see Tracking Vaccinations. Click on that link, and that will open up my little review page. And within that page are some direct links to Allison's website where you can get the booklet or order numerous copies and pass them out to friends. This is the type of thing that you are going to want someone to look at and read, because some of what you read is really going to shock you. So, Allison, I just wanted to put that plug out there.
Yeah.
Because it's important. It really is. I'm convinced, and I'm glad I did put it up on my books page.
Oh, thank you. Yes, and I was going to say the reason for the title is originally I was trying to understand what had paralyzed my son after his first shot when he was 4 years old back in 1984. He had gotten the DPT, and he was paralyzed for 3 days and only able to breathe and swallow. So I was looking for what paralyzed him and discovered, as I was tracking the culprit that paralyzed him, I discovered the trail that led to autism. And it's pretty obvious. So what I've been doing is studying how vaccines are made and then how they work. And with that, it's very evident how they can be completely dangerous, how the three different kinds of vaccines can achieve the same thing and destroy budding brain cells in the limbic system, basically, mm-hmm. in babies, which is what's causing autism. You did mention swine flu, so I thought I really quickly would mention that if they're starting up, if they do start up the campaign to get people to do it, I suggest people get the dead viral shot and not the living spray up the nose. The living spray up the nose is very dangerous, especially if they do it correctly and thaw it out for only 30 minutes before they give it to you. If they wait too long, the viruses die because they've been frozen. and they don't want to put it frozen in your nose. They want it thawed out just enough so that they thaw out once they hit the base of the skull at the cribriform plate at where the olfactory bulb comes through, because they're spraying it up your nose, so it's going right up where the olfactory bulb is. It's very dangerous. So avoid that, and if one is still opting for it, which they really, I mean, they really don't need to, but it's safer to go with the dead one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Now, from reading your book, actually, what I've learned is that reptiles developed this sense of smell in that particular part of the brain, and this is passed on to humans. So,
yes, it's our first brain.
Let's give the swine flu vaccine, the aerosol form, to the reptilians. That's the easiest way to get rid of them.
Yeah, it is very fascinating. The first brain that formed is right there to figure out what we were smelling. And I say we because really our bodies are the mammal body developed out of a branch of the reptilian body. So that's why the spinal cord and the cerebellum is actually reptilian.
Mm-hmm.
And then the limbic system, which has all our instincts and everything mammal, is what makes us human. And then the third part of the brain is literally what they call, the researchers call, the human part of the brain. They themselves give these titles. You look at any medical textbook, you can see it broken down into three different epochs of human evolution, which is reptilian, the mammal, and then the human. And the human brain only really stores information. That's all
mm-hmm.
it does. It's just the library, which is fascinating. And it can grow new cells. It's designed to grow new cells. That's why we can retain memories even into old age. So it's actually, I mean, destructive things over wear and tear in life, we might lose some brain cells, but really that part of the brain is designed to just continue to grow new cells to store new memories.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you have a living virus in your brain that's destroying it once your immune system goes down when you get old, which is the cause of a lot of dementia. But basically, yeah, that's how that works. So it is fascinating.
Well, I may have lost a few brain cells over my life so far, but no one's found them, so I don't have to do that.
But we're always growing new ones till the end of our life, is my point,
yeah.
Contrary to what they say, yeah.
All right. I know there were quite a few things that you wanted to touch upon that we didn't talk about last week, and this is a very deep topic. This is not something really superficial. You know, we're talking about all types of vaccinations and...
Yeah,
and we're interested in not mm-hmm. fear mongering, but educating people. I know that that's your role,
yeah.
And certainly anyone who's been listening to this show for any modicum of time or reading some of my articles, I've exposed the intentional pandemic, really before it hit, and I'm talking about the propaganda. I exposed a document that came out in 2006.
Yeah.
Issued by IBM France, describing a pandemic that was going to occur at that time within the next 5 years. And they said there was 100% chance. Well, they waited roughly until 2009 to announce it, although they tried something at the Olympics in China the year before. And there was a rumor that they were going to give these shots. So we know that this is something that was planned, and it's about population reduction. Their concern is not our health, as far as our sound health, let's say. You want to comment on that?
Yes,
before?
Because, like, for instance, I mean, yeah, there's so many. I mean, on one hand, I'm not against immunization per se against diseases, but one has to really look at the situation. And, like, in the old days, diphtheria was something that was really scary. But the risk of the vaccine, which is really high in babies, maybe that's a risk one wants to take. But nowadays, when it doesn't even exist, the risk doesn't make any sense at all. And then, in knowing that there is a risk to, because most of these germs cannot be made into safe vaccines. Only a very few can. And there's three different kinds. So, there's the dead viral, the dead bacterial, and the living viral. And so those are the three different kinds. And the one I was going to bring up of the three different kinds, if they literally look at what they're doing, if they're really concerned about the health of the people, they would, and they would wonder why we have so many allergies. They would wonder why we have so much autism, so many SIDS, so much stuff. So I was going to touch on allergies, for instance, because the allergy thing is really tremendous. And the way that a body is reacting to an allergy is the same principle they use to make the vaccine work for the dead bacterial vaccines.
Yeah.
And I'll explain really quick what I mean by that. In the dead bacterial vaccines, because they're dead, they're adding a poison. And the poison is so powerful, and those poisons are diphtheria toxins and tetanus toxins, but the poisons are so powerful that they make the immune system go into hyper state of attacking everything, and they attack all foreign proteins. Because the actual target germ in the DPT, for instance, the one for whooping cough, is the whooping cough germ. But the whooping cough germ is actually not toxic. It's very mild, and that's why an adult can have whooping cough, not even know it, just have a bad cough, and he's had whooping cough, and there's no repercussions. The only reason whooping cough is dangerous and scary in children is because it colonizes the throat, and the throat can swell a little bit. But if they can survive, if the swelling isn't that bad, I mean, they're whooping because they're having trouble breathing. But once it leaves, it doesn't do any damage. What does damage, actually, is the poisons they've added to make the immune system react. So it's reacting to the diphtheria and coming in and attacking all the foreign proteins that just happen to be there during the battle that goes on for hours and sometimes days following the vaccine.
Mm-hmm.
And so while somebody's driving in the car and they're breathing in pollen, which is a protein, all of them will be foreign proteins. The dander on a cat is the little bugs. You've got dust. That's the bodies of bugs, too. Peanut butter is a protein. Milk is a protein. All these things are proteins that they come in contact with after they've been vaccinated. So they're not even – so even though this is the principle they use to get the immune system to notice the whooping cough, it's also, by that principle, it would create allergies to anything you're eating following the vaccine. I mean, if the doctors were really doing their job, once they gave you a shot, they would say, by the way, when you go home, avoid giving your kid any protein for X number of hours, maybe 24 hours, 48 hours. You know, who knows how, you know, X amount of time, do not let them come in contact to foreign proteins because they'll become allergic to that for the rest of their life. Maybe, or I shouldn't say the rest of their life. Sometimes they do, you know, the immune system gets over it once they mature. But sometimes they don't. I mean, everybody does react different to germs.
Well, then there's this issue of giving them multiple vaccines at the same time. How many kids are going to come down with whooping cough, tetanus, and
Yeah, it's a very bad idea to give them all at once. Yeah. It's too much for the body to manage. And in the old days, they used to separate the bacterial vaccines from the viral vaccines, but now they're mixing them all up. And I was going to mention then the diphtheria bacteria. That bacteria is really obviously, when you look at what it does, it strips the insulation on nerves and the brain cells. It strips the myelin. It does a demyelinating neuritis, they'll call it, you know, neuritis meaning a neuron or a nerve cell. They have myelin. It's an insulation cell. It's a cool little cell that wraps around and around 12 times in 24 months, and they wrap side by side like little beads, and that's how we get insulation on all the branches coming off of our brain cells.
Mm-hmm.
But the diphtheria, I mean, the living viruses will get inside and destroy it that way. The diphtheria, the poison, just kind of melts it. It's called necrotizing, which means it just kills the stuff. So they can see it in the lab animals, and you can read it in the manufacturer's notes. You can look up diphtheria toxin anywhere and see what it does. So injecting this into babies and not putting enough antitoxin at the same time is really extremely dangerous.
Because
that's all they're doing to get away with it. They're adding antitoxin and they're not measuring it. And knowing the nature of it, it's obvious how it can destroy. It's obvious how it can destroy brain cells in babies. I mean, it's really a no-brainer once one gets inside of how deadly these are. Mercury is only in one of these vaccines. It's only in the dead viral ones. You've got three different things that can go on. And mercury's only a minor part. And thimerosal's only a minor part. They actually use mercury in the production. And that completely kills brain cells, too. They're deadly soups, really, and they shouldn't be given to young babies, especially kids under two.
Well, we know we're dealing with individuals. I hesitate to even call them people that absolutely do not care about the consequences of what they do to us. This is strictly about profit. And more recently, we're realizing it has everything to do with population reduction. And here you have someone deciding who they're going to eliminate or creating the circumstances through which to begin reducing the populace with or without our consent. That's what's insane about this whole thing. Now, Allison, we've got and I'm just making a comment there. You don't necessarily.
No, that leads into healthcare reform and that whole subject, which is really important. And
yes.
Not really the, you know, I have my opinion on that, but it just seems very dire that would ever pass because it's really not the American way. As you say, it's meant to make more money on people being sick. I mean, what good is it if you're healthy and then you don't need to go to the doctor and pay for your own health care? They just don't want to be burdened with people who can't afford it. They want people who can afford it and make sure that they're spending on it.
Yeah. Okay. We've got a question from one of our listeners here. This is sort of a chat message that came through. They would like you to explain why there are toxins in the dead viruses that are injected. Now, I would presume...
No, it's the dead bacterial vaccines, not viruses. There are no toxins in viruses.
That's the question.
They're only in bacteria. Is that what he said, bacteria or viruses?
No, he said dead viruses.
He's made a mistake, and maybe he misunderstood me because it is a confusing subject. But it's actually...
I was going to correct him on that, so...
Yeah, the toxins are only produced by bacteria. Bacteria are chemical factories. They're much like us. I mean, they sweat. We sweat, but our sweat isn't toxic. Their sweat in the virulent forms are toxic. Viruses, though, are just, you know, alien little robots with nothing but a shell and DNA and a way to inject it.
Yeah.
They don't produce any, they don't eat, they don't shit, they don't sweat, they don't produce toxins. But bacteria do.
Yeah, the toxins are basically the elimination.
So back to the question, if you wanted to know why the bacterial vaccines had toxins in it, they've actually added the toxins to make the immune system react and start fighting everything that's present. Because the toxins are so deadly, they choose a level of toxin that's minimal lethal dosage level. And they do that originally in lab animals and to find out exactly what that minimal lethal dosage level would be, and they bring it right up to that point. So the immune system comes out in a life and death struggle. And because babies have such immature immune systems, they have to make them even that much more toxic, which is why most of the vaccines for babies are 10 times more toxic than the ones for adults, because they don't need to be that toxic for adults. Our immune systems are very mature, and they'll respond really quickly. The babies, they won't. Because the whole point, they don't consider, maybe we shouldn't put so much toxin in. That means there's just that much more that won't be covered by antitoxin. They don't think that. They just want a vaccine that works, even if it does kill some people mysteriously. I'm being sarcastic there because it's not mysterious. But even though there are sacrificial victims and, you know, soldiers that have died along the way, that the point is to make it work. So they do. They make them very toxic. And the immune system will react. Otherwise, it won't react. It won't do a thing. If they just give them whooping cough by itself, the immune system won't think anything of it.
Uh-huh.
Nothing will happen. So,
okay, well, that answers the question, I'm sure. all right, now, I did broach the topic of, that was moving towards the overall healthcare issue. I don't know that we're ready to go there yet. I know there's just so many things that you wanted to cover, as I was saying before, in regard
right.
to
mm-hmm.
all the concerns about the various types of vaccinations and the consequences.
Yes, and well, you know, as far as the healthcare issue goes, it's very revealing that most of the first world countries around the world have it and we don't. And it shows that the American, like in other countries in France, you know, in European countries, you're given a lot of free care in the beginning of your life. You have midwives, doulas, and you end up with daycare. We don't have that at all here. We don't get a free ride at all, and we're really meant to just be consumers. It's all about big business. It's not really about the people in America more than about the individual making as much money as they can, not about, you know, taking care of the poor people in the community or something. So passing health care just wouldn't work. We've got too many sick people. They've made sick, I think, with our diets. I mean, who thinks of putting soda cans in the schools for the kids, you know, and you know, in general, between all the vaccines that end up being overkill and confusing immune systems and causing autoimmune disorders and all these, and the antibiotics that they give people, and they're not paying attention to what they're doing. They're making a lot of people sick. The antibiotic thing has to be brought up because that's a huge issue, too. And it's kind of fascinating because when I was looking into the nature of the diphtheria bacteria, it's such a powerful producer of a poison that it's very similar to, it's the same kind of, it's an advanced form of bacteria that actually organizes itself in little branches and whatnot. It's very advanced, and the poisons that it's, all the bacteria related to it produce are turned into antibiotics to kill lesser forms of bacteria. So they're actually pesticides and fungicides. And you know, these are really powerful things we're playing with and manipulating with nature. And they prepare them as if they're in a kitchen, and that's why they call them recipes. You can see on my website, I have a link that shows the process from a 1950s World Book Encyclopedia of them making the polio vaccine. And these people are sitting, you know, they go from frame to frame, and they're in a kitchen with blenders, just putting the monkey kidneys in the blender, and then they throw in the virus and they grow it, and that's the vaccine, basically. You add a couple more things and presto. And, you know, they eventually took it out of the books, but I've got, you know, I scanned in the copies of these from the old, you know, world books in the 50s, and this is how crudely and simply the stuff is made. They show the people lifting it up to the light and looking, and the captions are like, they're looking for living viruses, you know, like, as if you can see them moving through a light. I mean, things have become more advanced these days, but originally, you know, vaccines are, they're treated as if they're just a recipe in a kitchen and they're baking a batch of soup, but, you know, actually we're dealing with some very dangerous things. You know, actually these really toxic bacteria, the most toxic ones, diphtheria, tetanus, some of these guys, they're actually controlled by viruses that have merged their DNA with them. And they control, it's called lysogenic, you know, bacteriophages, and they're like, they're controlled, the viruses are controlling the bacteria, and in the end can just kill them if they want. It's really fascinating. But when we're dealing with viruses and bacteria and mixing them together, and the DNA is designed to mix. That's why growing the vaccines, I mentioned last week that the vaccines are nowadays starting to be grown, you can read it in any textbook, they're starting to be grown on cancer cells. And the reason that's scary for me is because cancer cells, these things are going to be fusing their DNA, potentially, eventually, I mean, that's what it's designed to do. So the different germs, viruses and bacteria that they're growing in these cancerous cell mediums are going to be exchanging DNA potentially, and then we're injecting these into people. These have to be looked at. I mean, this is so new. I have yet to investigate this further, but just knowing what I know already about the nature of germs and their mix and matching DNA, this is really, that's a bad idea too. So they're doing bad things all over the place that are obviously dangerous.
Yeah, it makes you wonder what vaccine these the people that are developing these strange viruses received. What, you know, they're having an adverse reaction to something, or is it just the nature of evil
Well, yes, people will have all different kinds of reactions to the vaccines. And, you know, what initially started off as a noble idea to vaccinate people from germs has become, as we were mentioning, big business now. And it's a huge business. It's out of control, where instead of getting a vaccine that can last 10 years, the kids are getting it every 2 months when they're babies, getting them over and over repeatedly before their immune system is even mature enough to remember them. Under 2 years old, babies, children's immune systems are too mature to remember anything, and they're actually protected for up to 2 years by their mother's milk and their mother's immune system. They should not be taking the risk of having their limbic system damaged by poisons or living viruses or the mercury, giving them 2 or 3 years for their brains to make all their connections and to form and to grow the insulation and to be all protected like that.
Yeah, what do you suppose, Allison, is behind, and I don't mean to sound like I'm going off topic, but I'm considering, the natural immunity that a child that's breastfed builds up, being fed mother's milk, as opposed to some artificial substitute for mother's milk. And what do you think, has implanted this thought in the mind that women shouldn't be breastfeeding their kids? Is that the medical society that does that, or?
I'm not sure, but I know a lot of women seem to find it, I suppose, bothersome. But if they don't, they're really setting their child up for disaster. If anything, because the first 3 weeks of the mother's milk, the colostrum contains all the seeds for their intestines, and that's a crucial part of the body, is getting the right garden, the flora growing in the intestines to absorb the nutrients. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, what happens to people later on, antibiotics, when they first came out back in the 70 years ago, and the early forms that they were using were so powerful. They were like the level of ampicillin. They were level one, and they were so powerful, they killed off all bacteria back then. And now they're so powerful. We're all in using mid-range, fourth and fifth level antibiotics that destroy everything like a nuclear bomb. And they're destroying what your mother's milk seeded in your intestine when you were a baby. And it has to be replaced. So every doctor that does not discuss with a patient who they're giving antibiotics, if they do not discuss what should be done after they take those antibiotics, that they're being really negligent, because you should be taking, one needs enterocoated bifidus. Enterocoated means the outside of it is covered so it survives the acid of the stomach and can reseed all that destroyed good bacteria that was in the intestines, that was keeping the bad bacteria at bay. And once the antibiotics are taken, all the good bacteria is destroyed, and the bad bacteria has a field day, takes over, and prevents a person from digesting their food properly. And a lot of people eat more food than they need, which is a reason a lot of older people, men especially, will have these distended bellies. They're not wide, but they have these big stomachs sticking out. That's their intestines. That's not able to digest food properly, and things are just clogging up. I mean, part of it is what they eat, and part of it is because they obviously have bad flora in their intestines. Because that's what happens with antibiotics, and we all get antibiotics, and sometimes repeatedly. So people end up eating more food to get less nutrition. You know what I mean? Like, you have to eat more to try to get the same amount you would get if you had a normal environment there. And so what, these doctors are going to medical school and not learning this? And then they're coming out and they're making people sick by giving them antibiotics repeatedly. And then they creating MRSA and super strains of bacteria, because they give them out for everything. I mean, you can go to the dentist and they'll pull a tooth and they'll give you antibiotics whether you have an infection or not, just to prevent an infection, supposedly, which may or may not, but then we're just giving out antibiotics willy-nilly, a little too much. It's overkill. And they know that. They predicted this decades ago that we would end up with MRSA, and now we are. So they're crazy. So everybody needs to get enterocoated bifidus. I recommend Indian Foods brand. And that's a huge part of helping people maintain a healthy body and preventing germs from getting inside the body. because, you know, like, for instance, tetanus, if you swallow it, which farmers do, I mean, only a small percentage of their hooved animals on the farm will have it, but they can be swallowing it by touching their hands. But we have a mucus lining inside our body that's just like the outside skin, only it's inside. And it prevents stuff from getting inside your body. But if you have a very sick intestines that's all, you know, damaged and cracked and not absorbing right, anything can go wrong. And we can be absorbing dangerous bacteria and germs that naturally would have just gotten out of the body. And now they're not, because we're damaging our bodies by, you know, we think we're doing a good thing all the time, and maybe the doctors do mean well, but if we really look at what they're doing, they're not doing a good thing. They're making things worse. They're not doing preventative medicine. They're not really helping one create a strong immune system so that they don't get sick. Because down the road, we're going to be dealing with a lot more things like the Lyme's disease, which escaped from a lab, and all these other bizarre, I mean, they're growing so many, you know, playing around and messing around with so many strange things in labs, and these things do get out. And we end up dealing with them. And you know, HIV, you name it. These strange new things that this is what our immune systems have to be able to be strong enough to fight against, these other strange maladies.
Mm-hmm. Now, I know that you did want to talk about how HIV got into man, and that goes way back into the early 1970s, doesn't it? And
actually, it goes back to the late 1950s. It's quite fascinating, because back then they wanted to vaccinate the people of Africa against polio. And in the first few years, the first 3 years of the polio campaign, they actually used the injectable form, which they've gone back to now for some reason. But so they used it for 3 years and decided it was too dangerous and came up with and instead used the oral polio successfully for decades. And the oral is just a drink, so it's very safe. But at that time, they were doing the injectable form. So they did not have refrigeration in the airplanes. So they had to make the vaccine over there in the jungles of Africa. And to make the polio vaccine, every germ is grown on a different form of protein, like measles is grown on chicken eggs, and other ones are grown on casein milk products, and even some are grown on yeast, literally baker's yeast, which is another reason we have allergies for bread and yeast is because of that.
Mm-hmm.
But this is grown, polio is grown on monkey kidneys. So what did they do? They went into the jungles and they got the vervet monkeys that were living there, and they used their kidneys to stick in the blender to mix up and to grow the polio vaccine, you know, on those kidney cells. And that's the vaccine. Then they just suck it up inside the syringe and start injecting it into people. I mean, they throw some formaldehyde in, and, you know, to you know, paralyze the virus, kill it with this formaldehyde, but they're still injecting monkey kidneys from monkeys that were the survivors of their own AIDS epidemic 100,000 years ago. Now, by survivors, I mean they are still carrying the virus in them, but it doesn't hurt them because they were the 1% that had the gene that let them live with it. The virus found the host with the right genes that didn't die by its presence. So the virus takes a gamble by, you know, infecting everybody, because it will kill most of the hosts that it infects. But it will always find, you know, a percentage that will learn to live with it. And that's their favorite host. So all these monkeys had what they call SIV, simian immune deficiency virus. All of them. But they weren't sick. But they carried the virus in them. And so we then injected it into the African people in the heart of Zaire, which is the heart of the AIDS epidemic, way back in 1957. And 2 years later, by 1959, sailors who had gone down from Britain to Africa and slept with prostitutes had died. And there were two soldiers in particular, and their doctors were so fascinated that they rotted from the inside out that that they saved samples of their bodies and refrigerated them, which was vital to the key to seeing the first cases of AIDS, when these were literally the first, you know, saved cases of AIDS that we're aware of from 1959 from these sailors going down there. And because when the epidemic really hit in the 70s, as far as spreading throughout America, they destroyed the blood records, the blood bank records of, you know, virtually every place, and not much remained. So it was hard to trace the history and the course of the history of the AIDS virus and how it spread. But in the freezers of these doctors, there still remains the first, you know, HIV cases, those poor sailors who went to Africa. So it's kind of, I you know, don't think they did this one on purpose, but they were, you know, of course, typically not paying attention to what they're doing, and were pretty dumb to assume that there wouldn't be, you know, some strange virus from this monkey in the jungles of Africa.
Something tells me that's an understatement. Now, this is this was the vaccination, right?
The vaccine for polio that they were making on the monkey kidney.
Now, they didn't
grow
like
the virus on the kidney.
No monkey kidney pate or anything like that.
See, normally the blood of the monkey and the human would never mix. You know, they had to mash up the kidneys and inject it into people.
Oh, poor animal.
Get it going. And then, yeah, that's how they got it going.
I mean, the poor people too, but you know, this is just so atrocious what they do to the animal population of the world in the name of pharmaceuticals. You know, they should give it to themselves, you know, because their cry or their response to my comment would be, well, you know, what should we use? You know, use yourself.
Well, they're using cancer cells now, actually, apparently. I'll have to check the recipes, see if this is really, you know, true to the individual recipes, because you can read it in the physician's desk reference in every library. You can read the manufacturer's notes. And it comes out every year. It's a massive volume. And you can read most, I mean, there's more to the processing behind the recipe that one has to go into and study. But basically one can see, you know, they will say what it was grown on and the medium it was used and all that. But the reason they like using cancer cells is the life of the cancer cell never ends. They reproduce perpetually forever. And that's actually a primitive cell. That's what a cancer cell is. A normal animal cell has a limited lifespan. It will only reproduce, say, 100 times, and then that's it. And then they have to start another batch. And so it seems for the idea, not because it's safe for people, because it's easier to make, because of laziness, they'll use the easier medium. Why use another batch of, you know, some weird protein? Sure, let's, you know, they even for chickenpox, they use human embryonic lung cells because they reproduce better than most human cells. But then now they can use these cancer cells. They reproduce perpetually because they've become primitive cells. The cancer cell, when it's in the human body and it's turned cancerous, it's actually decided not to be a sophisticated cell anymore. It doesn't want to work in unity with the rest of the cells in, say, the lungs. You know, if you've got someone smoking cigarettes and they're killing some of the cells within their lungs, the whole organ starts to suffer after a while. And some of the cells that are still alive that can feel the organ dying don't want to die with the lungs. And they decide to branch off and go travel on their own, and they revert back to being a primitive cell like cells were millions of years ago before they organized themselves into life forms. And that's really what a cancer cell is, just an ancient, ancient primitive cell all of a sudden. It's just like this little mechanism assigned to genes where it can just, for the sake of survival, just switch over. And it's a, you know, it's a kind of a mutant thing, but that's what it is. And, of course, we have so many toxic, that's why so many things can cause cancer. There's so many things can set a system out of balance, as we can see, and including living viruses, because, you know, if you have living viruses in you, if they get inside your central nervous system or your brain and your spine, they like to get inside the insulation cells around your nerves, and they'll destroy it, you know, when they burst out, and they'll just thrive inside of there. and what the cells will do in the human body is try to line and try to kill themselves so they don't give a host to the viruses anymore, and they create these mass dead tumors of dead cells that have committed suicide in the body to try to stop a virus from spreading. It's quite fascinating, but there's many things that we're doing to ourselves with our supposed medical establishment. I mean, some of them mean well, but really the medical institution is only good at cut and pasting, you know, cutting you open, fixing you up, patching you back together. You know, they really don't know a lot about the nervous system, the brain, or the immune system. Those are their
goals. Or zipping you up in a plastic bag. They seem to be pretty good at that, too.
Yeah.
Allison, we have it's sort of a two-part question from one of our listeners here. They're wondering if you might expound a bit on enteric-coated probiotics, such as 3-lac and 5-lac, and then Prilosec and the impact of giving it to a child, let's say, around
Prilosec?
Six months old for acid reflux. Either one you want to handle. If you want me to remind you about them, I will.
Well, acid reflux, a bunch of different things can cause that. But basically, the enteric-coated acid reflux, I would start with giving a child this enteric-coated bifidus. It's called Bifa-15 is the product, and they come in these tubes, and you don't bite them. You just swallow them. You don't want to break the little pods open. You want to swallow them. And they sell them in these boxes of 30, and you take one every day for a month. And within about 2 weeks, you'll start to see a difference in the ability to digest food. Because often the acid reflux is this is undigested food. And what can happen is not only can bad bacteria, because of antibiotics, and only because of antibiotics, or not only, I'm sorry, radiation is another thing. If one has had X-rays over their body, that too can do it. But when it is destroyed and the bad bacteria takes over, that bad bacteria can spread into the stomach. And there's a very common one. It's a Heliobacter bacteria. I forget the name. It's Helicobacter, and it can get into the stomach. And what it does is it reduces the stomach acid on purpose so it can live there. And it gets into the gallbladder and the things that are producing the bile and the stomach acid, and it can totally neutralize it. And then this makes it harder to digest food because you don't have the stomach acid to break it down. Mm-hmm. And often that can back up. And once you get acid reflux, where heavy, fatty food particularly that's hard to break down is backing up, you know, pizza's a bad thing, bread, cheese, these are bad things that will back up the throat. Once you get that acid, the stomach acid is pretty powerful. Once it starts burning that hole through, it will keep burning the hole through. And once the hole opens up, it's open. And then you really have to just treat that problem delicately for the rest of the person's life, basically. It doesn't really heal. The acid can be scarring.
Is it a possibility, Allison, that a young child might develop, an intestinal fungus as a result of the mother having used antibiotics before the birth actually took place? In other words, let's say the mother stepped
out. No, the antibiotics, if the mother takes the antibiotics, it should not affect the baby. But
let's say
it can
she
affect
has
the mother
candida.
So much. What's that?
Yeah. What I'm saying is in a case that the mother's off the antibiotics, but she develops a case of candida.
Oh.
And is it not possible that that could be transferred to the child, which would maybe cause some of these digestive problems?
No, I don't think so. I don't think the candida would spread to the child. It wouldn't pass the placental wall. It's a bacteria, too. It's quite large. If the child hasn't had any antibiotics, then, one would have to look at what else could be happening. And sometimes vaccines can affect the intestinal tract also. So, you never know what could have affected, but it isn't normal. No, the child should not be having these problems so early. And I would try a regimen of bifidus, because even if one doesn't know specifically what bad bacteria is in there messing with everything, by giving the bifidus and the seeds of the good bacteria, they'll just take care of it for you, and it will just set everything right. You know, once we give the body everything it needs to be healthy, it can take care of itself. We're kind of the dummies, you know, riding along, kind of messing things up. But the body knows what to do if we give it the right stuff to deal with. But I highly doubt it. But candida is definitely a very dangerous thing, and especially in adults, and it can spread throughout the body, and it likes to follow the nervous system.
Mm-hmm.
If it isn't stopped in the intestines, and it once it gets into the body, a person could be in a lot of trouble.
Well, that's basically why I brought that up. The thought entered my mind that that could be something that is occurring in some cases.
Yeah, but I doubt that the child, I mean, it wouldn't be manifesting just in the stomach in the child in that way. The candida comes out, you know, in other parts of the body. I mean, if the child had, like, rashes coming out on their hands and stuff, then that's more of a sign that the candida is spreading. And,
mm-hmm.
But yeah, so go along with the bifidus. Eden Foods has it. That's my favorite brand, because they were one of the pioneers in getting it from Japan back when the Japanese, of course, came up with this decades ago. The bifidus, the enterocoated bifidus. So
okay.
They're the ones to buy it from.
Well, yeah. Thanks for handling that. I'm sure you'll get kudos for that response. Anyway. That gives somebody some direction anyway. That's what we're trying to do.
Oh, good. It's so important because, you know, a lot of people have irritable bowel syndrome. They have a lot of digestion problems. They have this Helicobacter bacteria in their stomachs. And nobody tells them what to do. They go to doctors and they never, ever mention enterocoda bifidus. It's just astounding. And I've saved people over and over again whose colons were going to get cut out and different problems like that. So, yeah, so anytime antibiotics are given kids, please do. Go ahead, get this enterocoda bifidus for them. I'm glad they brought that up. That was great.
Okay. Now, did we cover everything you wanted to cover about HIV and how that got started?
Yeah.
I think we did.
Yes, I did. I brought up enough about that for that to be digested, how that can happen. Because, you know, I am introducing how these things are made. It is quite a fascinating history. And all of these, yeah, the three different kinds that are made, people must learn the little basics about viruses and bacteria. Those are the two main kinds of germs that we have out there. And there's three kinds of vaccines they made out of them. The bacteria ones always have to be dead. They cannot be alive. So they make these dead vaccines, and they throw poison in those to make the immune system respond. And then they have the dead viral ones, which are, they use mercury to count the germ particles, and that kills brain cells too. And then they have the living viruses. So the viruses can be either alive or dead. And the living viruses are, actually, they're the only ones that really work. I mean, if you get sick with the germ, you're obviously self-immunizing yourself for life, and you're going to pass those genes on to your kid. So really moderating an illness is really the best immunization one can get, which one can do with the antibody shots, the immunoglobulin shots. Those can help one get over these diseases. So that's really a better idea, you know, and then giving these dangerous things to little kids, to babies under the age of two. It's really way too dangerous. The living viral ones are super strains that have been growing in labs
mm-hmm.
for decades. And they literally, you know, count how many cells they can infect. And they've got these strains now that have 50% TCID, they call it, which is tissue culture infectious dose, or plaque-forming units. And the cell will plug up the hole where the virus got in with a little plaque hole, and then has no idea that there's a virus inside that's going to kill it and destroy it and burst out, and then it will scar over, and then that's what you get, the scarring all along the insulation on the brain cells. But it has no idea, and that's how they count these things. And when you get into the details of how these things are made, it's astounding, and they're absolutely terrifying. And to imagine giving these to kids is actually completely crazy. You know, they're getting 36 of them before they're 18 months old. I believe it was about 18 months that Jenny McCarthy was saying. And the numbers would just keep growing. I can't even keep up with it. And if parents are so gung-ho, and then they should be injecting themselves, too, and testing them on it. Except they'll find out that it's illegal to take most of the ones that they give to the kids.
Yes.
It's illegal to do that, yes.
Now since in our remaining moments here, Allison, I'd like to just mention something. Since this pandemic started, the news of the pandemic started last fall, and, of course, it didn't go anywhere. The hundreds of thousands of people and the millions of people predicted to be dying was not true. We found that there were a number of websites putting out fictional information. In fact, it was propaganda. And when we got down to the nitty-gritty, a lot of it was being put out by Dr. Henry Nyman. And I had begun researching Dr. Nyman, and at the same time, Dr. H. Ruat was looking into why he was putting out so much information about getting these vaccinations. And it occurred to me through my research that Nyman had an interest in licensing technology and patented technology to all the pharmaceutical manufacturers. These vaccine manufacturers were going to be making tons of money, and he stood to make a large percentage of hundreds of millions, even billions of dollars. So, of course, he's going to promote this. And very few people knew who he was. You see the name, the prefix doctor in front of somebody's name, and you presume that they're an expert. Now, the ligand technologies has to do with the ionic or the molecular bonding to a metal atom. So these vaccinations, to use this ligand technology, have to have metals in them. For one thing.
The viral ones do, yes. That's how they see, the dead viral ones, they just use the shell. They throw away the DNA, and all that's left is the shell. And they, you know, put it in a little blender, and they break it into little particles, and they have no idea what they have. They have a huge pile of this stuff, so they throw in mercury because it bonds to the heavy metal bonds perfectly. Each molecule of mercury will bond to a specific amount of protein. That protein is a piece of the shell of the virus. And that's how they count how many pieces of viral shell they have, by knowing how many molecules of mercury they've thrown in. And it's just by deduction then. So they have to add the mercury, or they have no idea what they're working with.
Well, we did a number of shows exposing this secret interest that Dr. Nyman had, and all of a sudden his message started to pipe down quite a bit. I'm not saying, you know, that we didn't meet any opposition. Certainly, you know, it became attack the messenger time. But the reason I'm bringing this up is they predicted this. They predicted this via a document. IBM predicted it in 2006. It was orchestrated. It was planned that they were going to do this. So we know this is not a natural event. And the whole issue, as far as I'm concerned and many others, is the danger in this is getting the vaccine. This is all created in a laboratory. And the only way you can come down with it, if you're living in Midtown Manhattan, you're not going to get on the bus and get the swine flu.
The viral test for swine flu is very expensive. I mean, it's easier to discover bacteria. You have to use electron microscopes. You have to know what you're looking for to find it.
Yeah.
You know, and flu is very common. And every day, about 100 people die from just regular flu in the country, which, you know, is what Mother Nature does. It takes you out when you get old, and you get, you know, a few people die from flu. So, you know, the supposed epidemic could have been just, I mean, who knows what it was. It could have been a regular flu that they obviously did, you know, as you say, set up, because you can't predict something like that in such great advance unless you're planning to release it. And if you think about it, yes, they did make a lot of money, because the government is paying to produce the vaccine, and then they're compensating the doctors to give the vaccine, and, you know, it's something that has to be done, so the money just shows up, and yeah, somebody was making a lot of money. And it's strange with the spray, the nasal spray. didn't go through any 30-year FDA study like most drugs have to. They put that on the market instantly. And having looked at the manner, see, the mode of injecting vaccines is really important. The way you, you know, break the skin and actually introduce these germs into the body and poison stuff is a very important mode. And to see them suddenly inventing, coming up with a nasal spray, it was the most terrifying thing I've ever seen. In all these years of studying vaccines, I can't believe that they came out with that, because it's incredibly dangerous. It gives the viruses, once they thaw out up in the top of the nose at the base of the brain, they can swim right through the openings there. It's the only place at the base of the skull where there's openings into the brain is right where the nose, you know, is smelling, where the little nerves come down from those olfactory bulbs. So why are they spraying this thing up their nose? And then if you look at the FDA.gov, they said, yes, you're going to get very sick, you're going to get the cold, the flu, you're going to get the flu from this. So luckily, most people didn't get the flu because the doctors didn't know what they were doing. They thawed them out too long, and the viruses died. Yay! So most of the viruses died. But some people did get it, and that was the purpose of it. The purpose of it was to give people viruses. Most of them are going to end up in their brain, and they're going to sit there and be kept at bay by their immune system until their immune system fails, which is definitely going to happen when they get old. So, you know, if somebody had a successful nasal spray up their nose, when they get old and their immune system fails, they're going to be in a lot of trouble. They're going to suffer dementia because the viruses are going to spread like wildfire. And these are the things to consider when you're handling living viral vaccines. They're alive. How you want to take it? We should be taking it into the throat because we're protected by the throat. The throat has the greatest immune system there. So why are they giving us a HIV vaccine, which gets rid of one of the parts of the immune system in our throat? They're giving that one to babies as much as they give the whooping cough one. They give them that one like 5 times by the time they're 18 months old. And all it does is destroy part of their immune system in their throat. So it's very strange. I mean, you really look at all these vaccines. Some of these are not for things we really need them for. And you got to question why they're giving them then. If they're going to weaken the immune system, if they're going to put viruses in your brain, why would they do this? Do we have too many people on the planet? We've doubled in our population in my lifetime.
Well, I think they're preparing the brain for the educational system. You know, getting you ready for school.
No, I don't know. I don't know why, but it's not a very...
Of course, I'm being a bit sarcastic there.
You know? Yes.
That's where our education is nowadays anyway. So, well, we can intend something much higher.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
We are out of time, Allison, but I want to thank you again for that treasure trove of information that you brought onto the show tonight. And I want to encourage folks to check out your Tracking Vaccinations booklet. It's not very expensive. It's certainly worth every penny. And if you go to my website, directlightproductions.com, I did a little review that I mentioned at the top of the show, and the links to Allison's website are there. Take you right to the pages where you can get the booklet. You can get it in quantity. She's got specials on that. She's even got bumper stickers.
Yeah, and on my website, I have links to pages that explain that I have actually scanned in pages from the PDR so they can see how some of these vaccines are made. And I recommend that anyone who's going to get a shot or give a shot to their child, they first look up, they find the brand, they ask their doctor what kind they plan to give them, what brand it is, and they look up the brand because they're all kind of made a little different. Some are more toxic than others. Not the processing, but just toxicity or something. Mm-hmm. So they should check them out.
Okay. Well, I want to thank you and let the listeners know that you'll be back with us again on Thursday, the 18th of March.
Excellent.
So I'm looking forward to that, and I want to thank you for the wonderful work you're doing, and I'm getting thanks from people that are chiming in with me. So
excellent. Thank you. It's wonderful. I'm so glad that you had me again. Thank you so much, Don.
Well, I can't wait till the next show. Got a lot more. And
yes,
I'm going to try
more.
To come up with some good questions for you, too.
Oh, okay. Good. Well, we'll be in touch then about it. It'll be great. Thank you.
All right. Well, in the meantime, Allison, you take care, okay?
Okay. Thank you, Don. Thank you. thank you.
All right, folks, that about wraps it up. You've been listening to Evident Footprints on bbsradio.com. And our special guest tonight, Allison Jones. Her website is trackingvaccinations.com. I encourage you to go there and check everything out. There's a ton of information on tonight's topic, and as well as many things that we just didn't have time to discuss. Special thanks to Wind Talkers Radio Network around the world and blogtalkradio.com. Also, I want to thank Seth Hendrick on the sound, Don and Doug Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible, and most of all, you, the listening audience, for tuning in. Join me tomorrow night when my special guest will be former U.S. Marine Drew Malone Raines III. In the meantime, I wish everyone a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.